This is the August 27 edition of Commodity Week.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Well, welcome to Commodity Week. I am Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason. Our panelists for the day include Matt Bennett. He's at agmarket.net out of Windsor, Illinois. Chip Nellinger joins us from Blue Reef in Morton, Illinois. And Philip Shaw from Dresden, Ontario is here. He's in Canada, of course, at Grain Farmers of Ontario. And Garrett Toy is here with us as well from First Choice Commodities. He's out of Stockton, Illinois. Thank you all for being with us. Commodity Week, of course, is a production of Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. Find us online. Listen to us on demand anytime you'd like. We're at willag.org, W-I-L-L-A-G.org. Just click and play right there from the website. Or if you prefer, you can find us in your favorite podcast application. Let's begin where we normally would on our program by getting a list of items that we should discuss for the day. I'll start with you, Matt Bennett.
I think it'd be interesting to see how everyone thinks yield expectations have been adjusted in the month of August due to the rainfall totals we've seen. And then, you know, maybe also a little bit of a discussion on how much more Chinese business we can all expect moving forward, because obviously some of these sales like this morning on corn were certainly something that we all wanted to see.
Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri Marketing.
Yeah, I'd say as a corollary to that, what's going to drive this is the fund position. They're getting pretty lofty levels in the beans. They've added a lot of that on this week. How much more are they going to come to the table? And are they going to get long in corn? They've come out of a lot of their short position. Are they going to get long now? I think that is going to be a key to our markets the next 60 or 90 days as well.
Philip Shaw in Dresden, Ontario. Anything from your list?
Yeah, I would like the guys to discuss the value of the U.S. dollar and how it's affecting some of our futures prices for grain. It's, you know, the Canadian dollar acts in an inverse direction to the U.S. dollar. So up here, I talk about the Canadian dollar all the time, but it's highly dependent on the U.S. dollar. And I know the U.S. dollar has been going down lately, and I'd like the guys to discuss that. Also, too, there seems to be something amiss in China, you know, with regard to all the demand we're getting for American soybeans, as well as American agricultural commodities, whether it's corn or some of the meats as well. And I just can't quite figure it out, and I'd sure like the guys to discuss what might be going on there. And, you know, the possibility that maybe we didn't plant enough soybeans this year. So that's just a few things.
And Garrett Toy from First Choice Commodities.
Yeah, I think the focus, you know, Matt kind of hit on the on supply question. I mean, obviously, I think it's on the demand question, especially at where we're at on potential further shutdowns or returns of gasoline demand, you know, and its impacts on ethanol and the corn S&Ds. And I also, I think it would be interesting to find out everyone's kind of ideas as far as, you know, there's been a lot of inflationary talk and whether that has been an influence to the commodity markets or to the ags. Are we finally starting to see some of this inflationary buying in the ags starting to show up as an underlying feature as well?
I'd like to come back to Philip Shaw's question here. Is there something amiss in China? And what might it be? I know that the floods have been really heavy. That would be in some of the soybean growing areas, but generally from central to southern areas. And, of course, corn and soybeans grown in the northeastern part of China. Matt, what do we know about production this year in China and stocks that they have on hand?
Well, if, I don't, stocks on hand, good luck there, first of all. But as far as, you know, there's definitely been production lost. I mean, there's no question. Obviously, they've had flooding in places. Heck, they've had dry weather in places. So they've had a mixed bag of weather calamities this year. But, you know, the interesting thing leading up to this is that the Chinese had been using more corn than beans, you know, pretty much every year here for the last several years in a row. And it's finally kind of caught up. I mean, you look at these auctions, government auctions, they can send it, continue to offer up 4 million metric tons of corn every single time, every single bushel gets sold. And so, you know, dating back to the month of May, I mean, they've sold well in excess of 40 million metric ton of corn. So, you know, as far as their stocks though go, I've said all along, you just cannot figure it out. It's really hard to know. If they give you information, you don't know if it's reliable. I do feel like they know that there's a lot of power in their information, and they certainly use it to their benefit. But if the market's telling me anything on interior corn prices for China, I mean, they're sky high. They can buy U.S. corn, take it over there and sell it and make money. So I kind of expect them to do that here moving forward.
So I want to relate that, Karatoy, to the other question that Philip asked, which was about the U.S. dollar and the cost of commodities from the United States on the world marketplace. Is it just that China sees commodities from the United States as a good buy in comparison to what they might be able to pick up from South America at this point?
If there is indeed an issue within Chinese SMBs domestically, higher commodity prices domestically, the value of the dollar, I don't believe, really has much impact in it. They're going to buy what they want to buy, when they're going to buy. The dollar weakness is more going to be impacted by Japan or the European Union, our traditional buyers that are more price elastic or demand elastic as far as where the origins are. But there is something amiss. I mean, you know, 2 weeks ago, Chinese President Xi Jinping, they have a new mantra about reducing food waste. It goes right down the food chain from corn and soybeans to pork to everything. But they're even discussing potentially weighing customers at a restaurant's table to determine how many plates of food they can buy. So something is definitely going on there. And I think that there's a concern about, you know, whether it's cheap commodities and they're trying to control their own food inflation, which may be a domino effect of the ASF issues from 18 to 24 months ago that they're trying to keep in check.
Anything to add to this argument, Chip Nallinger?
Yeah, I mean, I think the dollar, I just say two things. I try to keep it simple. And they said here recently, I think it was even earlier this week, that their corn crop and their grain crops are excellent. So that probably tells you all you need to know that they do have a crop problem. I think it comes back to they don't have a bumper crop and they need the bushels. And I think they also telegraph pretty nicely right now, we're the only game in town. You know, there's not a lot of supply of beans left in Brazil. And normally we'd be picking up that business now anyway. But I'm really fearful, number one, once the election's passed, and number two, once we get into winter and new crop supplies in South America, they're going to go back down there, if it works for their balance sheet and it pencils in better than us. So it's nice to see the business now. I don't get too caught up in the dollar because some of our other competitors, Russia and Brazil, especially Brazil, their currency is still very, very weak. So, you know, once they have new crop supplies, they're in a lot more competitive situation than we are. And even if China business continues, we're going to lose some of our other business potentially to South America once they have new crop supplies available. And that's a ways down the road. So we've got some clear sailing for a little while here.
Philip, did it provide any clarification for you? And do you have things that you want to add?
Sure it does. I really appreciate the comments, guys. I know Garrett was talking about people getting weighed going into a restaurant and getting weighed taken out. I hate to be in that lineup. But I think that actually had to do with a Chinese obesity policy. So you can see how intrusive that is and how their society's different. But like the U.S. dollar, and I guess Chip touched on it there with Brazilian currency. As a Canadian, like, I'm looking at cash prices now for old crop corn here at $5 and new crop at $4.50 here in Ontario. Well, that's in Canadian dollars. So as the U.S. dollar rises, typically our Canadian dollar goes down and gives us higher domestic prices and gives us much more of an incentive to produce. It's the same thing in Brazil. So as we've seen the U.S. dollar going down over the last little while, it's had the opposite effect. And, of course, it enhances the movement of agricultural commodities out of the United States, specifically wheat. Usually wheat is the one that really reacts out of that, reacts with regard to that. Now, I've traveled a lot in Asia, and I always say that the view looks different from there. And I think it does now too. You know, we're standing here in the American Corn Belt, and we sort of like certainly like to sell things. But like, I do think something's amiss over there. But on the other hand, I just think that it is all part and parcel of the economic growth rates that they've had over the last 10 years. Sure, they're slowing down to some extent. Sure, there's been a little bit of a problem with the U.S. and China with regard to these tariffs, but the country is still growing, and demand, you know, it is still growing. It just, Brazil picked up a whole bunch of it that maybe should have come to the United States, and I just think they're catching up with it now, and you can just see all the Chinese purchases of American soybeans we've seen over the last month. And I just think that, you know, we're catching up and the phase one agreements are being fulfilled. And somebody mentioned we'd like to get past that American election. Let me tell you something, as a Canadian, I can't wait till you guys get past it.
You mentioned that you wondered whether we had planted enough soybeans. Why?
Well, because I heard that comment from some of my American colleagues is that, you know, the price of November soybeans now is $9.42. And I think it dipped down into April. It was $8.31 in April, and now it's $9.42. So, you know, I know we all love growing corn. You know, I'm a farmer too. I grow better corn than I do soybeans. I call soybeans the great liars because sometimes they don't tell the truth during the growing season. They always do it in the end. But at $9.42, looking back now, I often wondered that if we didn't grow as many soybeans as maybe the market would have liked. And because of COVID and because of all the nuances in the agricultural supply line, it's catching up with us a bit now at November soybeans at 942. That's why I thought that way.
Let's talk about yield expectations. And Philip, I'll stay with you because you're in an entirely different, well, you're not all that far out. So you're what, to the north and to the east of Detroit, is that right?
I'm about 17 kilometers or 12 miles east of Michigan. And the agriculture where I am here in the deep southwest of Ontario, you couldn't tell the difference between that and northwest Ohio and northeast Indiana and you know, the thumb of Michigan.
And what are your yield expectations?
My yield expectations for corn this year is about 200 bushels per acre, and soybeans around 50, maybe a little bit more. It'd certainly be better than 2019.
Matt Bennett, how about your yield expectations?
You know, coming into August, I would have said that we were looking at, a 245, 250-plus type corn yield. Yes, we have holes. There's no question about it. Getting out in our fields, though, in the last month, where the corn's good, it's just flat-out phenomenal. The early April-planted corn, I think that it had enough rain to get it to close enough to the finish line that I don't think that we lost a ton of yield there. But there's no doubt that April hasn't done it any favors. So I'd say overall our yield for our farm will be below 2018, maybe 5% or so. I think that Illinois as a state is going to be certainly off of that 207, you know, that the USDA originally projected. For beans for my farm, I've got to think that we had everything there. I mean, the recipe was there for us to have just a flat out amazing soybean yield farm wide. We still are going to have really good beans. Okay. We plant all our beans in the month of April. Our pod counts are really good. If we would get an inch of rain tonight from this remnant of the hurricane, to me, I would think that we would, I'll just be honest with you, 80 plus would be pretty safe to say. If we don't, I still think, 75, 80 bushel yield's probably fairly likely down here, especially with those April planted beans.
Chip Nellinger, the rainfall will not make it as far north as you are in the Peoria-Morton area. What do things look like in that part of the world?
Yeah, we're going backwards a little bit, but I think Matt has it right. A lot of this corn, in fact, there's a fairly large co-op right around Interstate 80, a little bit north, a little bit south. Pretty good sample size, and they do a yield survey every year, same routes, and they just came out with theirs. I believe they were in Illinois, in that area, I think a 196. 2 years ago, I believe it was 207. So a lot of this corn got planted early enough that this dryness it may rob a little top end and a little test weight off the top of this, but there's still some pretty good corn around. And the beans, you know, they're hard to peg, but I would, I guess, be in Matt's camp too. There were going to be probably a lot of 80 plus bushel beans. If it doesn't rain anymore, obviously in the month of August or the first half of September, maybe we're shaving that back. Maybe it's going to be in the 70s instead of north of 80. So we are going backwards, and we definitely could use rain, but there's still some pretty good crops out there. I think the dryness came late enough. It's not like a 2012 situation because we were much further along in maturity this year.
And Garrett Toy, I'll ask you to talk a little bit about the northwestern part of Illinois there in Stockton, where you're located, but you also have affiliated offices in the center part of the state of Iowa, around Des Moines and Ames, if I remember correctly. And I suspect you have a pretty good idea of what that crop looks like, too.
Before from 80 bushel bean yields. We're a little further north. We had a lot of bean potential here. We've actually been right here in northwest Illinois. We've been kind of fortunate. We've had some moisture when the Derrico went through 10 days ago. We didn't get much of the wind that Iowa got, unfortunately, but we got the moisture. So we got 1-2-inch rain. So I think the beans are set. We'd like to have another rain in order to kind of set some things. But I think we're looking at 50 to 60 to 70 bushel beans. 70 is going to be a little bit further west than where we are directly located, a little bit better ground. We're more gumbo, you know, close to the river sort of thing, a little bit more rock in our neck of the woods. Corn yields, the corn around here has looked tough all year. It finally came around midsummer, and then we haven't necessarily had the best finishing weather with the heat. I think that, you know, last year around here, most corn yield was 225 to 250. I think we're looking at 210 to 230 this year. It's going to be down a little bit. Iowa, man, it's a mess. I mean, I think I got a customer that texted me a picture this morning of corn around Williamsburg that got hit by the wind that they're basically just mowing down. How does that impact yield? It's going to be more of an acres issue where it's going to be unharvested acres rather than how it's going to impact yield. Where it's really going to impact yield is the drought in western Iowa. We've got, guys that are going to be shelling corn here this week in some areas. There's been corn that's been denting up in the northwest corner of the state for 2-3 weeks. If you're going to see, you're going to have reduced acres in the eastern half of the state, you're going to have reduced yield in the western half of the state, and it's how do you balance those two? The more acres that get zeroed out, you have to adjust yield higher and because it's just going to be an acreage issue and not a yield issue.
Can't you make the same argument on the western side, the western part of the state that you did for other corn, that it was planted so early that the dryness, though they've had a lot more than we have, will be offset by its early planting date?
Absolutely. Really the table is set. I mean, western Iowa was the garden spot. Early, we got the crops in, everyone felt great, and then the dryness that allowed us to get the crop in, it just never rained. In fact, for the state of Iowa, we just put out a thing yesterday. The state of Iowa needs to average 0.4 of an inch of rain. It's supposed to rain this weekend, or else it's going to be the driest April to August time period. It's going to be drier than 2012 over the summer, the entire summer. So it's dry, and I don't, with our customers, I mean, our Western Iowa customers have, they've been talking about how dry it's been all year. I mean, it seemed like the market really didn't want to pay attention to that until Pro Farmer and then maybe the Derrico came through when they had the crop tour. It seemed like it was very, it was a late recognition of the dryness in Western Iowa and maybe potentially how bad it was.
So, Matt Bennett, I want to come back to the Pro Farmer number for just a second on corn, because as probably most of you, I think, saw, Scott Irwin, ag economist from the University of Illinois, tweeted out, the difference between the average difference or gap between the Pro Farmer number and the January final figure from USDA, when you multiply it out with the August number, which can be pretty close from USDA, though this is a different kind of USDA report because it didn't have objective yields in it, put their pro farmer number back at 181.8. We'll learn a lot more in September when we get their next round, but I'm wondering what you're hearing across the Midwest and how you view all of these numbers put together.
That's a really good question. And so I guess the way I'm going to answer is this, Todd. I mean, to me, the 181.8 seemed like it could have been a little shy as of August 1st. However, given if you were going to use 84 million acres harvested, to me, there's no question whatsoever, just with the storm going through Iowa, that you're going to have to take that yield down if you're using those acres just at the outset. And then you look at what your crop conditions have done throughout the month. I'm not a huge crop conditions guy, but I can tell you there's no question that August has done nothing to help yield whatsoever. And so I think this is going to be a little bit different type of year. I think the Pro Farmer Tour always does a great job. I've been on it several times. But bottom line this year, I think that you have to lend more credit to a situation where you're actually getting out in the field. And so I cannot imagine, in my opinion, that you would see the yield trend back towards 181.8. I think there's going to be a lot of really good corn in parts of the Corn Belt this year. But at the same time, I think that you've got enough compromise corn, and you've got, you know, some corn that's not going to get harvested, that your total crop size is certainly going to have to come down from those August 1st numbers.
Chip Nellinger, how many acres do you think USDA will adjust in September for Iowa, the harvested number?
That is, you saved the tough questions for me, I guess, Todd. I don't know. I would think that it could be a couple million. I think that's going to be the debate going forward. It just seems like every year there's acreage questions, right? And that's kind of a hot button with me because of the way they do things. But they are resurveying. I would think it could be upwards of a couple million. You know, I've heard everything from a million to 12 million. So, you know, I think when it's all said and done, the actual unharvested, in my mind, could be right around 2 million.
Out of Iowa.
Out of Iowa. And then there's the RMA questions as to the whole acreage certification process and whether, you know, those numbers in August here kind of caused a stir in the marketplace, thinking that maybe there's way more acreage cutting to come. But I don't know that they were working with all the data, and may have been a disservice that they actually released those numbers because they weren't very accurate, in my opinion. They'll update those again every month. But there's a lot of acreage questions out there, not only with the wind damage in Iowa, but in general.
I want to know what everybody else thinks that number might be adjusted by. Garrett Toy, do you have an idea what Iowa adjustment might look like?
Well, we went through and analyzed, you know, basically a 10% reduction in production in just the wind-affected areas would give you a 186 national yield based off of last year's production. A 20% reduction in those wind-driven yields would drop you to 181. You know, I think, you know, perhaps we get too caught in with just what Iowa's going to do, but, I mean, the sum of the whole between, you know, the heat and the dryness, it's not just Iowa. You know, I think, you know, there's a lot of this August rally is weather, and it's the lack of rain and the heat. And it's not just Iowa, but it's Nebraska, it's South Dakota. I mean, I've heard a lot of comments that, you know, South Dakota doesn't look nearly as good as it did 10 days ago when the Pro Farmer Scouts were walking through it, you know, and it's just how this crop is finishing. You know, I mean, you looked at how this month has gone, you know, it's a perfect market of, you know, supply bears and demand bulls. And we traded down to lows in early August when those first private production estimates came out, and it raised the possibility of a 185 national yield. Well, then we drove down drove down prices into the lows, and then we bounced because the weather market changed, it quit raining. Now, you know, based on how severe conditions have declined in the month of August, those type models are pointing at a 175 yield. So now the supply bears have had it handed to them, and the demand bulls are firmly in charge here. Now, where does that run out of steam? I mean, we're still, you know, it's August 27th here, and we're going to be harvesting corn here very shortly. You know, at some point, you know, we're calmer heads are going to prevail. We're going to set a harvest low and go from there. You know, I mean, I've heard a lot of people talk about how we set in the harvest low, and man, harvest is few and far between. It's hard to set a low before harvest, you know, unless we really, really have a problem. But, you know, like Matt said, I mean, there's still going to be some good corn out there, and I don't think we have a disaster on our hands by any means.
Matt Bennett, should farmers be selling into the current rally?
Yeah, and so I think you got two different things, corn and beans. In my part of the world, Chip's part of the world, Garrett's part of the world, I think there's a heck of a lot of really good beans, above APH type beans. When you see the kind of rally you've seen in the bean market, I don't know how you can go wrong by locking in profit margins, selling November beans, you know, at 940 plus, so 942 on the close today. Corn, it's a little more complicated. Even after this stout rally we've seen, we're 30 cents below the spring insurance price. I can't get terribly excited, you know, if I'm a producer that has yields that are close to APH levels. I think that if I am 30 bushel or 20 bushel above my APH, there's no question that I take advantage of some of this rally. Now, in my opinion, if the rally stalls out and we don't break through 363, the summer high and the 200-day moving average is about right there. If we don't do that, I think that a person would be wise to get some of this corn sold. But if we break through there, I think there's going to be some fun on the other side of it.
Chip Nellinger, your thoughts on making sales at this time?
Yeah, I would tend to agree with Matt. I think this this bean move is pretty straight up. No market can go up at that pace forever. We're factoring a lot of bullishness, you know, and I think Garrett's point is well taken too. You got the supply bears and the demand bulls, and an economic fact of the universe is as you go higher, it does not increase demand. So, you know, there's a little headwind there, but I agree with Matt wholeheartedly. Beans, especially in those areas that have good yields and have had some rain, they might be the only thing that make money on the farm this year, and you got to make hay while the sun's shining, so to speak, and lock these in. I agree. Also, there's good carry in the corn market. I want to be a little bit patient, and if we'd see a push up towards the low 370s in December, start locking some carry in for some on-farm stored bushels. So, yeah, I'd be definitely in Matt's camp.
And Philip Shaw, I suppose I want both sides of the border if you're doing something different and what you recommend for farmers in the United States.
Well, I've been listening intently. I was wondering about the derecho damage. I thought it affected about 37 million acres across Iowa and a couple different other states, Illinois and maybe Minnesota, I don't know. But you guys can tell me if I'm wrong. I would assume that you know, in these problem areas that the basis will be wonky or will be sloppy at certain times because of the storage problems that they're going to have, as well as the you know, the crop problems that they have. You know, the other thing is I was told on the floor of the Chicago Mercantile Exchange one time that you have to feed the bull every day. And I don't know if, based on the yields the guys have been telling me about that, whether we'll be able to sustain that, especially in corn going forward. And there's nothing ever wrong with selling a crop where you make a profit. Now, of course, in Canada, Ontario and Quebec, Eastern Canada, I don't really write about Western Canada. Largely, it depends on the value of the Canadian dollar, which is an inverse relationship to the U.S. dollar. So basically, we want the U.S. dollar to go up. And you know, for instance, I'll give you an example. It was in March of this year when COVID struck, and the U.S. dollar was surging. Our Canadian dollar fell to 68 cents U.S. It's now 76 cents U.S. And so we've lost a dollar in basis alone on soybeans. So it's a little different animal with regard to recommending what prices to sell at here, because foreign exchange, just like the Brazilian farmer, is a huge part of our price equation. And so I always say that nobody knows, you know the drill, and just immerse yourself with the market factors and go from there. But if anybody could comment on that acres figure with the derecho, I'd appreciate it.
You know, it really does vary. I mean, I think given some recent RMA changes that it may depend or may influence what how acres are counted or whether things are harvested. So I think it's tough to policy is going to become an issue or it's going to be an impact in it. And it's tough to put a hard number on it because of the changes that the insurance companies are making to make it a little bit easier for the producer. So, I mean, I guess I can't comment on it without, you know, given the changes that are coming with the crop insurance side of things.
Was 37 million acres? Was 37 million acres was affected?
No, that seems really high. I mean, that's the amount the wind went over, but impacted acres are more like four in Iowa, four in corn. So it'd be like seven, four corn and three beans, I think is the number that they finally kind of settled on.
Okay, thanks.
Let's get a final word now from each of you. I think, Philip, I'll start with you. Any final comment for the day?
I would just counsel producers to be thinking about many of these issues we talked about. I do think there's something amiss in China, and the value of the American dollar, that affects you guys too. And as long as it goes down, that's a good thing for agricultural commodities. But I tend to think the Chinese thing is going to get more interesting, and I think demand's going to continue. And that bodes well for agricultural commodities across the Corn Belt. You got to keep in mind, too, as we go forward, when Brazil starts planting soybeans in October, November, and you know, if there's any type of production calamity at all in the Southern Hemisphere, my goodness, this thing could blow off. But that's never happened, or hasn't happened very much. But you got to keep that in mind because the S&D is tightening just with the dry weather and just with the Chinese demand. And if they have any type of production shortfall in Brazil going ahead into the winter months, that will really move prices higher, likely, on soybeans anyway.
Philip Shaw, of course, is with Grain Farmers of Ontario. He's out of Dresden, Ontario, Canada. Garrett Toy is here as well. He's with First Choice Commodities out of Stockton, Illinois. Garrett, your final word.
I just like to remind people that, you know, the farmers coming into this harvest in an extremely undersold position given the prices that we've had this year. But that being said, is you know, the market is readjusting their yield ideas. We came in August at 181.8. You know, and now with condition declines, whether you use them or not, there's people talking 175. 175 yield would still be the third largest on record. You know, 176 in 17, 176.8 in 18. You know, given the USDA's ways that they adjust feed and residual, if we get a carryout from a 2756 down to a 23, the on-farm average price was 360. It's the last 2 years. 2018, 2019, the same is what they've been the last 2 years. The USDA is currently at 310. So if 175 yield is a 2.2, 2.3 carryout, then corn is undervalued. It means the prices are going to be the same price as what they've been the last 2 years. The one caveat to that is all year long, the USDA has forecasted an on-farm soybean price 60 cents cheaper than what prior analog stocks to use years have shown, and that's largely because the expectations were that corn was going to be a laggard to the soybean market. If corn is coming back to normal, then the bean S&Ds, you know, justify this 70 cent move in the last 11 days. You know, you're talking 950 to 975 beans, you know, in an on-farm cash price that's probably closer to the 9 and 9 and a quarter or 940 than 860. So, you know, I think that, you know, we made some cash sales this week in soybeans. We're looking at some July 21 above 380 and looking at East 21. Unfortunately, that's only about a 3 cent carry there. But you got to reward the rally because you know that everybody else is going to be selling this stuff. But I do believe that there might be a little bit more upside.
Matt Bennett of AgMarket.net, your final word.
Yeah, I just think that producer needs to try to keep it as simple as what they possibly can. If they can lock in profit margins, they need to be watching very closely. And I think Chip said something that needs to resound with them that, you know, with corn, you may not be hitting a home run. You definitely want to lock in a really good situation on soybeans if you can, though, and maybe make that where you hang your hat this year. But I think that to try to be hitting high or to try to be wanting more at a time whenever we've seen prices rally. We've been begging for this rally for quite some time, if we're honest about it. And now the rally's sitting right here in front of us, and especially in the case of soybeans being above the spring insurance price, it's really tough to ignore those prices. If it goes on up, it goes on up, big deal. But if you can make money, who cares if it goes on up? So as far as corn, it is a little more complicated. But once again, if you get into the field and you see above, maybe your yields are 10 to 15 bushel better than what you thought they were going to be, you know, adjust your profitability spreadsheet and then figure out at what levels you can lock some stuff in. Because personally, I've got to think that in some of these situations, you may get blessed with that exact scenario and you can sell corn maybe a little cheaper than what you thought you could.
Chip Nellinger with Blue Reef Agri-Marketing.
Yeah, I would agree with everything everyone said. And to top it off, something we haven't talked much about, we talked about the Pro Farmer Crop Tour, some of the damage in Iowa and the dry weather in northern Illinois and Iowa. But talking to some producers down in southern Illinois and in Kentucky and in Missouri, and they're sitting back smiling because they probably have record crops. Point with that is what we're losing in some of the I states, we're picking up in other areas to offset some of that loss. So still have a big harvest ahead of us. And I think to Matt's point, you got to have a plan with all that, right? Readjust those profitability sheets, like Matt said, but then have a plan and do some scale up selling and lock in carry in the market. Because I still think when it's said and done, not that there can't be 15, 20 cents more upside in corn, but if you don't lock that in, the carry goes away. And you're better off having sold it out of the field if you don't have a plan to lock that in. So I'd have a plan, maybe some friendly things ahead. I'm a little concerned in this bean market as well that it's been so straight up. I don't think it's going to be an easy ride from here. And the higher we go, the more South American and Brazilian supplies this winter are going to be sought after by everyone, including China, because they're going to be cheaper.
Commodity Week is a production of Illinois Public Media. Find us online. Listen to the whole of the program anytime you'd like at willag.org. That's willag.org, or search for it in your favorite podcast applications. Our thanks go to our panelists this week, including Matt Bennett of agmarket.net, Chip Nellinger from Blue Reef Agri-Marketing, Philip Shaw from Grain Farmers of Ontario, and Garrett Toy of First Choice Commodities. I'm Illinois Extension's Todd Gleason.